Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is called Re'eh, and it is from Deuteronomy chapter 11, starting at verse 6, to Deuteronomy 16, verse 17. The Haftarah is Isaiah 54, starting at verse 11, going to Isaiah 55, verse 5. And the Brit Hadashah is John chapter 7, verses 37 to 32. And I'm sorry, 37 to 52. So let's have a word of prayer before we get started. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech HaOlam. Abba, I thank you for your Shabbats, and I thank you and praise you for keeping your hand upon your people. And I just ask that you would bless these words with your words only, and that my words would not sustain, that they would die away, and that only your word will come back and be fruitful. And I ask this in the name of Yeshua. Amen. Okay, well, let's start at Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 26. Behold, that word there is re'eh. It's actually ra'ah, depending upon how you say it. But re'eh means literally to see, or literally or figuratively to see. It also means advise self. You know, you're supposed to advise yourself, appear, approve, behold, certainly consider and discern. And that's what we're going to concentrate on in this Torah portion, because what the Lord is asking us to do is to discern between blessings and curses. Now, it doesn't make sense to our minds that you have to discern between blessings and curses, because, you know, we think we know what a blessing is and we think we know what a curse is, right? But the truth is, we really don't. And the reason I say that we don't know what a blessing is because the world has a whole different set of blessings than what the Lord has for us. The world's blessings have to do with the material things of the world and the political blessings that you can get when you have what they call in the biz, juice. You know, if you're in the music or entertainment biz, they call it juice. That's a blessing. If you're in the political world, they still call it juice, and that means that you get special treatment, and you know, that kind of stuff. That's a blessing that's in the world, you know. So stuff, material stuff, and being made to be better than other people, being given honor and credit where credit is not due, and being looked upon favorably politically and so forth, that's also a blessing in the world. But you see, those things are not blessings according to the Lord. Now, He wants us to discern between His blessings and His curses. He says, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse. And now, I've already told you about the discernment between the Lord's list of blessings and curses. But now, we're going to learn the difference between the Lord's blessing and the Lord's curse, you know, because it says here this day, He sets before us blessing and curse. And so in verse 27, He says, a blessing if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you this day. Now, we are out here in the diaspora, in exile, and we often see that people are blessed in ways that we are not blessed, and we think, well, you know, because they're blessed, they're doing okay in the world, and they're getting along better financially, and you know, they're not having to deal with health issues, and they're not having this issue and that issue, and we are. That means we are not blessed. Well, when you're in exile, you don't get the full force of blessings. But you do get the full force of cursings. That's called being in exile. That's what it means to be in exile. That you have to suffer more outside of the land than you do inside the land, you see? And so we're out here in the world where sometimes things get tough for us. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. And we're going to see in this Torah portion how it's supposed to be in the land. As a matter of fact, in Ekev, we learned some things about the force of the goodness of the Lord, about the gardens and so forth. He says there in verse 10, chapter 11, verse 10, he says, "For the land where you go in to possess is not as the land of Egypt, from whence you came out, where you sowed your seed and watered it with your foot as a garden of herbs. But the land where you go to possess it is a land of hills and valleys, and drinks water of the rain of heaven. And it's a land upon which the Lord your God cares for. The eyes of the Lord your God are always upon it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year." And you see in verse 14 that he says, "I will give the rain to your land in its due season, the first rain and the latter rain." That means the spring rains and the fall rains, that you may gather in your corn, your wine, and your oil. "And I will send grass to your fields for your cattle, that you may eat and be full." You see, life is good and much better in the land. You know, the Lord takes care of that. You know, you have to do a little bit. You have to actually put the seeds in the ground, and you have to be around to feed your animals and so forth and so on. But the labor, the angst, and the toil is not there in the land. But you see, here we are in exile. We don't get that kind of special care in exile. But we do get the full force of curse. And as a matter of fact, that's what the Great Tribulation does. It brings us the full force of the curses that the Lord said we're going to get for disobeying Him. Now let's go to Deuteronomy 11:28. It says, "And a curse if you will not obey the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside out of the way which I command you this day to go after other gods, which you have not known." You see, there's coming a time when, or at that point when Moses was talking, there would have been coming a time that there were gods on the earth which those people didn't know. Now, we're down here at the end, and I got news for you. People are still worshiping gods they don't know. You see, we have American Idol, right? People worship at that tube those celebrities on the tube and in the movie theaters. And I'm not making any kind of statement about watching videos or movies or any of that. But we know that people actually do that. They sleep with these posters on their bedroom walls, right? Those images of those gods that you know, they plaster on their walls. And so they're worshiping individuals that Moses had no idea about. And he says, "which you have not known," you see? And so here we are at the end of days, and people don't believe that when they've got those idols on their walls, that you know, that they're actually, that's a form of worshiping of them, you see, that they don't even know at that point. They didn't even know about Mithras, which was the religion that spawned Catholicism. You see, that God had not yet even sprung up. So here we are at the end of the ages under a Catholic or universal Christian system that came out of Mithras, which was from a God that those people standing there in 11:28 did not know. So that's why he says that you're going to go after other gods which you have not known. And he says, don't do that, because if you do that, then I'm going to curse you. Verse 29, "And it shall come to pass, when the Lord your God has brought you into the land where you go to possess, that you shall put the blessing upon Mount Gerizim and the curse upon Mount Ebal." And they are not, excuse me while I turn off my red alert. I'm following what's going on in Israel. And by the way, if you're not following what's going on in Israel, I would say, please, you know, I would exhort you to go ahead and do that, because there are some extraordinary events happening on the earth right now that have to do with the curse that is coming. Verse 29, "And it shall come to pass, when the Lord your God has brought you to the land where you go to possess it, that you shall put the blessing upon Mount Gerizim and the curse upon on Mount Ebal. Are they not on the other side Jordan, by the way, where the sun goes down in the land of the Canaanites, which dwell in the campaign over against Gilgal beside the plains of Moreh? For you shall pass over Jordan to go in to possess the land. There are a couple of things I want to point out here. First of all, the Lord here in verse 29 is giving us yet another mark. First of all, these marks, the mark of blessing on Gerizim and the mark of cursing on Ebal, those are marks for us to be reminded about the commandments, okay, about the blessings and the curses. We wear tzitzit, in order to be reminded about the commandments. The high priest wore a headdress, what the Bible calls in the King James, a mitre. It's also known as a turban that had the mark of the Lord upon it. And that mark is, I believe, the same mark that's going to be put onto the 144,000 men when they get marked. And so the Lord is in the business of marking his people and marking his land. Now, we need to be in accord with those marks. In fact, the Sabbath is a mark upon his people. And so we need to get ourselves in accord with his markings, you see. And so he says that it's on the other side of Jordan. What does the Jordan have to do with anything? Because, you know, they're going to walk across the Jordan on dry land in the same way that they did when they came through the Red Sea. Well, the Red Sea is symbolic of the Lord taking you out of the wilderness. But when you go through the wet Red Sea and you come out through from that watery grave, that's what it is. It's a watery grave, and you come out of there on the other side. It means you're innocent, okay? Now you're going to go across the Jordan, and the water is going to part again. And you're going to go through another watery grave, and you're going to come out. But this time, it's not just about innocence. It's about land ownership, you see. The Red Sea takes you into the wilderness, but Jordan takes you into the promised land. You see, and that's why he says, are they not on the other side, Jordan? That's Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. By the way, where the sun goes down. So it's to the west of them in the land of the Canaanites, which dwell in the campaign over against Gilgal besides the plain of Moreh. For you shall pass over Jordan to go in to possess the land. See, Jordan is about possessing the land. The Red Sea is about going into the wilderness. And so you're going to possess the land which the Lord your God gives you, and you shall possess it and dwell therein, and you will observe to do all the statutes and judgments which I set before you this day. And we know that there's a caveat to that, because if you don't, he's going to kick you out. We're going to learn about that in a little bit later. Deuteronomy 12, verse 1. These are the statutes and judgments that you shall observe to do in the land which the Lord God of your fathers gives you to possess it, as you live upon all the days that you live upon the earth. I'm so sorry for stuttering there. You shall utterly destroy all the places wherein the nations which you shall possess served their gods, upon the high mountains and upon the hills and under every green tree. You know, we should just look at this and go, you know what? If worship has anything to do with trees, why, you know, we probably ought not to do that. You know, that should be the first thought, you know, that Christmas tree thing that people do. You know, that's a green tree. It should not have anything to do with us. So that, when you read the commandments, that's the first thing that should come to your mind. Verse 3, and you shall overthrow their altars and break down their pillars and burn their groves with fire, and you shall hew down their graven images, their pesel. These are, idols that have been made. But remember that all idols are images and not all images are idols. But this pasel is something that is carved. It's from the word pasal, and it means to carve from wood or stone. And you shall destroy the names of them out of that place. And you shall not do so to the Lord your God. In other words, you shall not destroy the name of the Lord out of that place. You shall not destroy his altar out of that place. You see, verse 5, but to the place which the Lord your God shall choose out of all your tribes to put his name there, even to his habitation, you shall seek, and there you shall come. And there you shall bring your burnt offerings and your sacrifices and your tithes and heave offerings of your hand and your vows and your free will offerings and the firstlings of your herds and of your flocks. You know what we're getting here? We are getting further instruction on where the Lord is going to tell you to go worship. Now, we had the prophecy of where we're going to go worship when Abraham took Isaac to the mountain. You see, that mountain that Abraham took Isaac to, that's the place where the Lord is going to put his name. But now he's telling them, you see, this is not just an understanding that you get from prophecy. I'm actually telling you now that there's a place where I'm going to put my names, and that's where you're going to go worship. Now, we're going to have to wait until, you know, David comes along to find out exactly where that place is going to be, you see. So we've got another few hundred years to get more information. You know, the Lord doesn't tell us everything right up front. You know, if the Lord wanted to tell us everything up front, he could have just filled up the book of Genesis with the instructions and then just said, you know, this is what it's going to be. No, he does this because he needs us to understand that his coming to take back the earth is actually a process. It's not an event. So he tells us these things in increments so that we'll understand that it's a process. And in fact, understanding processes is a lot easier for a Hebrew mind than it is for a Greek mind. Verse 6, and there you shall bring your burnt offerings and your sacrifices and your tithes and heave offerings of your hand and your vows and your free will offerings and the firstlings of your herds and of your flocks. And there you shall eat before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice in all that you put your hand to, you and your households, wherein the Lord your God has blessed you. You shall not do after all these things that we do here this day, every man whatsoever is right in his own eyes. See, they're out in the wilderness, and they're doing things a certain way, but he's telling them that, you know, there's going to be coming a time when I'm not going to tolerate this. You know, he did tolerate Noah putting up an altar wherever Noah landed, and he did tolerate Abraham and Isaac and Jacob putting up altars and worshiping him wherever they were. But there's coming a time, you know, now after this wilderness experience where the Lord moved the tabernacle and they followed and they set up the altar and the tabernacle and all that stuff there, wherever that landed. There is coming a time that not only are we going to do it where he says, but we're not going to be doing whatever is right in our own eyes. Doing what is right in our own eyes is something that we do in the wilderness, you see. So we need to understand this in the context of not just that the Lord is setting up a place, but the Lord is setting up a standard that is higher than the one that we have, and that when we go into the land, that's the higher standard is the one that we're going to be living under. See, we've got this going on in the Hebrew Roots community where we can't figure out what is the standard, because every man is doing whatever is right in his own eyes. And you know, the doing of whatever is right in your own eyes runs the gamut from the most evil, which is the Islamic State stuff that's going on now, but they call it good. They believe they're eradicating the earth of sin, okay? But look how evil they are, but it's right in their eyes. And so what else is right in man's eyes? Being gay. Being gay is right in their eyes, right? And then you come to what we call religious folk, which you and I are not religious folk. We're actually living after the laws of the Commonwealth of Israel, but people call us religious, right? But we have in here, in the Hebrew Roots community and in Christianity, we run the gamut between our various opinions of what is the right thing to do, you know? So the Lord is telling us that there's coming a time when that is not going to be that way anymore. Verse 9, for you are not as yet come to the rest and to the inheritance which the Lord your God gives you. But when you go over Jordan and dwell in the land which the Lord your God gives you to inherit, and when he gives you rest from all your enemies round about, so that you dwell in safety, then there shall be a place which the Lord your God shall choose to cause his name to dwell there. There shall you bring all that I command you, your burnt sacrifices, burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes, and the heave offering of your hand, and all your choice vows which you vow to the Lord. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your sons and your daughters and your men servants and your maid servants and the Levite that is within your gate, for as much as he has no part nor inheritance with you. I want to stop here and tell you about a little debate that I've been having on Facebook in the past week. Somebody brought up the subject of, should women wear tzitzit? Again, they brought that up again. Here's the deal with what the Jews call time-bound commandments. They believe that tzitzit is a time-bound commandment. The Sabbath, you know, that's a time-bound commandment. The feasts, those are time-bound commandments. Commandment that has an appointed time, you know, the tzitzit, for instance, you're supposed to wear them daily. You know, it doesn't really say that, but that's the sense that we get. We understand that, you know, it goes on your garments. And some people will say not daily, but maybe just on Shabbat. Well, whenever you think, it's a time-bound commandment. But I want to share something with you, because right here is a good illustration of how wives are not commanded to keep the Sabbath. They're not commanded to keep the commandment about the tzitzit. They're not commanded to keep the feasts. Yet, we will say that wives are subject to these commandments. But some guys will want to pick and choose. Some women will want to pick and choose. They'll say, well, the Sabbath and the feast, those are for women. The tzitzit, they're not, you know. And then they'll point back to the time-bound commandments, which doesn't make sense, because the Lord tells us that you, and I'm going to describe for you who you is in a minute, but it's you, your sons, your daughters, and your men servants and your maid servants. Okay? So he's mentioning here males, females, but he says you. Who is you? You is a plural noun. It's a plural pronoun. You know how in the English language you can be singular and you can be plural. You is a plural pronoun that indicates the husband and the wife, you see, because you doesn't mean just the husband, and it doesn't mean just the wife, and it doesn't mean the husband without the wife or the wife without the husband. And so when we come upon these commandments where the Lord says you are to do this, we need to understand that he's talking about the echad unit that is created, that is one. Because when you're one, you're not two, right? You each have a role in that oneness, but it's about both of you. Otherwise, if we don't get this straight, then we're not going to understand how the women fit into the congregation. Because truthfully, the Mormons teach that a woman has to have a husband in order to get into heaven, right? That is not what the scriptures teach. But because the wives are not mentioned in these commandments, the interpretation is that, well, wives are not even part of the congregation. It's actually just, you know, your sons and your daughters until they get married. I mean, once they're out of the father's house and into the husband's house, why, you know, and that apparently a daughter can't get into heaven without a husband. So, I mean, if she never gets married, there's a problem there, you see. And so then we end up with all these odd interpretations for the commandments. The truth is that women are commanded to do all of the commandments that the Lord gave to the congregation. They are excluded from the commandments having to do with kings, priests, and warriors. Now, kings also exclude all other men. Priests also exclude everybody who is not of the line of Aaron, and warriors exclude all women, okay? But that doesn't mean that women are not part of the congregation. And I'm going to be teaching some more on this at Restoration Fellowship very soon. So you might want to stay tuned for that one. It's going to happen next weekend, verse 13. Take heed to yourself that you offer not your burnt offerings in every place that you see. See, the Lord is going to change this thing about, you know, the traveling altar. But in the place which the Lord shall choose in one of your tribes, there you shall offer your burnt offering, and there you shall do all that I command you, notwithstanding that you may kill and eat flesh in all your gates, whatsoever your soul lusts after, or that your soul has a longing for or desires, according to the blessing of the Lord your God which he has given you. The clean and the unclean and the clean may eat of it. Okay, that means that even if you have become unclean for going to the tabernacle or the temple, you'll still be able to eat of this meat. This meat is what you fix for your own household. It has nothing to do with you coming before the Lord at the tabernacle and the temple. And so there are people in the world who will tell you that in order to truly be clean, that you need to eat a vegan diet. In fact, it's not only vegan, but it has to be organic. And if they suspect that you have used anything but heritage seeds, you know, those seeds that come from sources that are only organic and are not, you know what I'm talking about. That if you don't do that, then you're not really eating a clean diet. I beg to pardon, you know, I beg to differ with you on that. For those people who believe that you have to eat a vegan diet in order to really be clean and get close to the Lord. He says right here, in your households, however much meat you want to eat, no, by the way, because he said that you can eat as much meat as you want, I don't believe those doctors who say, oh, you got to give up meat. I would sooner give up the unclean stuff that's put in the processed food, those, you know, the chemicals that they put in the processed food, and just eat meat and vegetables and do what the Lord said and eat clean meat, you know, to stay fit to go before the Lord, than to listen to someone who says, well, if you're not eating vegan, then, you know, or if you're not eating organic, you know, you're in the wrong, you see. No, I think we need to just pay attention to what the Lord tells us to do, you see. If we do that, then we'll be okay. If we do anything other, then you know what we're going to be? We're going to be burdened. And then people are going to look at our lives and they're going to say, why do you burden yourself that way? I don't want to have to do that, so I am not going to obey the Lord. Do you see how that when we overdo this stuff, that we actually put a bad, we give the Lord a bad, you know, a black eye? Verse 16. Only you shall not eat the blood. You shall pour it upon the earth as water. See, this has to do with the difference between what is a sacrifice and what is a slaughter. Because both of those things, a sacrifice and a slaughter, use the word zebah in Hebrew. The difference between them is that the blood of the sacrifice goes on the altar, and the slaughter, the blood of the slaughter of the zebah, goes in the earth. You pour it into the earth. If you do anything other with the blood than pour it into the earth, if you put it on doorposts, or if you sprinkle it on people to sanctify them, or you do whatever you're going to do, you know what you've done? You've committed idolatry. Now, that does not have to do with what Moses did to sprinkle the people with the blood back there in Exodus, because that had to do with he also sprinkled blood on the altar, you see. So let's not get confused about that. Let's not start up that argument. Verse 17, you may not eat within your gates the tithe of your corn or of your wine or of your oil or the firstlings of your herd or of your flock or any of your vows which you vow, nor your freewill offerings or heave offerings of your hand. You know, you are to bring a certain kind of tithe with you to the feasts. When you are at the feasts, then you get to eat a certain portion of your tithes there, see? But you don't get to eat those at your own house. You have to bring those to the temple during the time of the feasts, you see? But you must eat them before the Lord your God. See, I was just telling you this, the tithes that you eat is you take them to the place which is before the Lord your God, in the place where he chooses you, your son, your daughter, your manservant, and your maidservant. You see, this is the thing we also don't teach, is that the echad unit, husband, wife, and the son and the daughter, and the manservant and the maidservant. You know, if you've got servants in your house, which we don't usually out here, you know, our servants are not really servants of the household anymore. They're employees. But if you have servants, they're to go with you, you see. And the Levite that is within your gates, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God in all that you put your hands to. Take heed to yourself that you forsake not the Levite as long as you live up on the earth. You see, this is this here time-bound commandment means that even when we're in exile, we're not to forsake the Levite. When the Lord your God shall enlarge your border as he has promised you, and you shall, as he has promised you, and you shall say, I will eat flesh because my soul longs to eat flesh, you may eat flesh whatsoever your soul lusts after. If the place which the Lord your God has chosen to put his name there be too far from you, then you shall kill of your herd and of your flock which the Lord has given you, as I have commanded you, and shall eat in your gates whatsoever the Lord lusts after. So, what he's saying here is not, you know, if it's too far for you to go to the feast, then, you know, go ahead and do this sacrifice out here at your house. No, that's not what he's talking about. If the place that the Lord has chosen to put his name is far from you, in exile, then you still get his blessing to kill and eat as much of the meat as you want in your own homes. What he's telling you is that this commandment doesn't just apply to in the land, it applies to when you're in exile too. Don't get the idea that he's saying, well, just go ahead and do those sacrifices and eat that, right, you know, out there, you know, do that at your house. No, that's not what he's saying. And he says in verse 22, even as the roebuck and the hart is eaten, so you shall eat them, the clean and the unclean of them alike. Only be sure that you don't eat the blood, even in exile. He's giving you instructions for when you're too far from Jerusalem, when Jerusalem's really far from you, and you're in exile. You still get to eat these things, but be sure not to eat the blood. You know, this blood thing is a basic of the Torah. It's just basic to the Torah. You know, in Acts chapter 15, the apostles said to the Gentiles who were where? Outside the land of Israel. They were in Asia. They were in Greece. They were in wherever they were, in Egypt, you see. And they said, don't eat the blood, you see. So this is where they get this commandment that even in the exile, which is outside the land, even when you dwell outside the land, which when you dwell outside the land, you're in exile, you're not to eat the blood. You shall not eat it. You shall pour it upon the earth as water. You shall not eat it, that it may go well with you and with your children after you. See, the Lord is really concerned about people drinking the blood when you're far away from the place where he's going to put his name. Why? Because that's what Gentiles do. They drink the blood. Listen, I know that there are cultures, for instance, in the Slavic cultures in Germany and other cultures that make blood pudding. They eat the blood. You're not supposed to do that. It doesn't matter where you are on the earth, in the land or outside the land, don't do it. Only your holy things which you have and your vows you shall take and go to the place which the Lord shall choose, and you shall offer your burnt offerings, the flesh, the blood upon the altar of the Lord your God, and the blood of your sacrifices shall be poured out upon the altar of the Lord your God, and you shall eat the flesh. Observe and hear all these words which I command you, that it may go well with you and with your children after you forever, when you do that which is good and right in the sight of the Lord your God. See, wherever we are, if we observe and hear these words and do the commandments, then he will count it to us as having done the good and right thing in the sight of the Lord. See, we get this comparison between doing what is right in our eyes, in our own sight, and doing what is right and good in the eyes of the Lord, in the Lord's sight, you see. Verse 29, when the Lord shall cut off the nations from before you where you go to possess them, and you succeed them and dwell in their land, take heed to yourself that you be not snared by following them, after that they be destroyed from before you. So after these people are gone out of the land, you're not to be, you know, trying to take up their habits. He says, you shall not inquire after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? Even so will I do likewise. You're not supposed to follow their ways. You shall not do so to the Lord your God, for every abomination to the Lord which he hates have they done to their gods. For even their sons and their daughters they have burnt in the fire to their gods. What things soever I command you, observe to do it. You shall not add thereto, nor diminish from it. 13:1. If there arise among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams and gives you a sign or a wonder, and the sign or the wonder comes to pass, the thing he spoke to you, saying, let us go after other gods which you have not known, and let us serve them, you shall not hearken to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams. For the Lord your God proves you, he's testing you, to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. You know, I get emails from people who send me, Christian prophets, the dreams and the words of Christian prophets. I don't listen to them. I do not listen to them. Why? Because they want me to stop walking after the Lord my God. The Lord is testing me to know whether I love him more than going to listen to the words of people who are false prophets and false dreamers. By the way, the Lord said that in the end of days that the young men are going to see visions, the old men are going to dream dreams, and the women are going to prophesy. The daughters are going to prophesy. Okay? And so we're going to have among us Torah-based prophets, visionaries, dreamers of dreams, and people who are following the Torah, that when they tell you something, you need to listen to that. Verse 3, you shall not hearken to the words of that prophet. Oh, I already read that. Okay, verse 4, you shall walk after the Lord your God and fear him and keep his commandments and obey his voice, and you shall serve him and cleave to him. See, that's what a prophet is going to tell you. If you ever hear me say anything other than you need to serve the Lord and cleave and cling to him, then you will know that I have become a false prophet. See, it's not about gender. It's not about, you know, do I have the right body type, you see, about whether I can say, you know, you really need to serve the Lord and you need to cleave and cling to him. No, it's about whether the things that I say come out of a mouth that teaches that you're not supposed to do those things. You see, that's what it's about. And in verse 5, and that prophet or that dreamer of dreams shall be put to death because he has spoken to turn you away from the Lord your God. You see, that's what the prophet deserves if he speaks to turn people away from the Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to turn you back to Baal at Christmas and Ishtar at Easter, and to tell you, oh, don't keep that commandment because that puts you under bondage, because look what the Lord says, which brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you out of the house of bondage. Egypt is bondage. Israel is freedom. Torah is freedom. Sin is bondage. Crimes against the Lord, that's bondage. You see? And he says to thrust you out of the way which the Lord your God commands you to walk in. See, that's what a false prophet does. He seeks to thrust you out of the way which the Lord your God commands you to walk in. So you have to put that one to death. Now, by the way, we don't have a temple and we don't have a functioning Sanhedrin. I know that some people say, yes, they're functioning, but you know, really, you've got to have the priest and the judge in order to put anybody to death according to the Torah. So this part of it is something that here we are in the diaspora. It's another one of those things that we can't do, but we can put these people away from us. We can refuse to listen to their words, you see, but we can continue to call them to repentance. And so shall you put the evil away from the midst of you. If your brother, the son of your mother, or your son, or your daughter, or the wife of your bosom, or your friend, which is as your own soul, entice you secretly, saying, let's go and serve other gods which you have not known, you nor your fathers, namely of the gods of the people which are around about you, near to you or far off from you, from one end of the earth even to the other end of the earth, you shall not consent to him. You shall not consent to him. Now I want to address something there in verse 6, because I can see where somebody would say, well, you know, this commandment applies only to the men. Again, we have this issue because here it doesn't say you. It says specifically, if your brother, the son of your mother, and it says specifically, the wife of your bosom. Now, I want to explain something about the Hebrew language that we have it in English, but we try to apply in Hebrew a whole different standard. In English, we understand that there are male nouns and male pronouns, female pronouns, and neuter pronouns, right? And we understand in English that when we're talking about a group of mixed people, we say he. I mean, you know, it's just proper English. You and I learned this when we went through school, that a group of people of mixed gender is always called he. Well, Hebrew has that thing too, which, you know, every noun in Hebrew has a gender, and it's either masculine or feminine. Now, that doesn't mean that masculine nouns apply only to men and feminine nouns apply only to women. You see, there is a strong tendency toward natural gender, but that isn't exactly what masculine and feminine means, you see, because if it did, then we would say the ruach, which is feminine, applies only to women, you see. And so we can't go there, but we have to understand this Hebrew language thing, because in this particular spot, what we have here is the use of the word brother and son, which in the Hebrew, there is no word for sibling. And so you get the masculine brother and son, which, by the way, brother means kindred, you see. So if you're kindred, the house builder, you see, the builder of the family name, which, by the way, can be a woman, because women have seed, women build houses. And so we need to understand that these terms have a wider sense, because in Hebrew, there is no word for siblings. All right? And then coming down here to where it says Isha, that word is, in Strong's, it is number 802, and it is Isha. The first form is the feminine. The second form is the irregular plural, and it's used as a woman in the wide sense. It's also used as each, every, female. It's often used to express wife. But the Lord, do you think the Lord is going to just say that only the men have the ability to commit this kind of crime? You know, only the men can be lured away by a false prophet? No. Women can be lured away by a false prophet as well. So, you know, the sentiment here is that the spouse of your bosom, you see, because also the Hebrew word does not have, or the Hebrew does not have a word for spouse. So the word Isha is listed there, and it pertains to everyone. Why do I say that? Well, because one of its root is Ish, which means man. Another of its associative words is Enosh, which means a mortal, you see. And also, this word is a feminine noun, whereas we have the word brother and the words brother and son are masculine, you see. So the Lord is including the masculine sense and the feminine sense here. He is not saying that, you know, women would never go ahead and just not be ever enticed by a false prophet. No, we need to understand more about the Hebrew language and the way the Bible was written in order to properly interpret what is being said. Now, let's go down to verse 7. Where it says, of the gods of the people which are round about you, nigh to you or far off from you, from one end of the earth even to the other end of the earth. It doesn't matter where these false gods come from. You're not supposed to have anything to do with them. You shall not consent to him, nor hearken to him, neither shall your eye pity him, neither shall you spare, neither shall you conceal him. You see all those hymns there? Well, again, we see that we are once again dealing with this Hebrew gender phenomenon of some things being masculine nouns and other things being feminine nouns. You can't just apply masculine and feminine to being that it's for men only or for women only. You have to look at the context and ask yourself the question whether or not this applies to both men and women. And when you do this, then you'll get a better understanding and have a better interpretation of the scriptures. And in verse 9 it says, you shall surely kill him. It says, you shall not spare, neither shall you conceal him. In verse 8, your eyes shall not pity him. And you shall surely kill him, and your hand shall be first upon him to put him to death. Afterwards, the hand of all the people. You shall stone him with stones that he die, because he has sought to thrust you away from the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. And all Israel shall hear and fear, shall do no more any such wickedness as this is among you. And so here we see, you know, I'm pretty much out of time here for getting this to be within a certain amount of time. But we see here that the Lord has set upon the children of Israel some standards that are going to be higher for them than the standards they've been living under. You and I are going to have this same phenomenon happen to us. We're living in a certain kind of culture and under a certain standard, and we're going to have this be, not be like this when we get into the land. We're going to have to live to a higher standard. standard. In chapter 14, the Lord further delineates us from the pagans by telling us we're not to cut ourselves, we're not to make baldnesses between our eyes for the dead, because we're holy to Him. He is not the God of the death of the dead. You see, we're not to eat abominable things. We're to continue to do this while we are out here. Out here in the exile, you see. And so he's reiterating to us that this in chapter 14, the things that are abominable for us to eat and the things that are holy for us to eat. And then in chapter 15, he talks about the Shemitah years, you know, where we're supposed to be, make a release or let our, you know, let the debts of others go from us. And, you know, we hopefully that our own debts will be released by others, you see. And these are things that, by the way, we can practice them in the diaspora. We can practice them in exile. And so we don't need to wait on everything to practice them until we get to Jerusalem. We need to be doing everything we can in accord with the way the Lord commanded it here in the exile until we get to Jerusalem, until we get to Israel, where He will set the higher standard. And by the way, you know, chapter 16 addresses where you do the Passover. There's this big argument among the Hebrew brothers where you do the Passover. You know, we're not to sacrifice the Passover in our own gates, at our own house, in chapter 16, verse 5. No, He said the memorial is going to be at the place where the Lord chooses it to be, you see. And then he goes on to explain further about those feasts and the things that we're supposed to keep. And so we get to the end of the Torah portion here in verse 17. And in that verse it says, "Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which He has given you." Now that looks like it's just another commandment for us to follow, but it ends with the blessings that the Lord gives you to be able to give to others. And I want to take this moment to just tell you that I so appreciate the blessings that some of you bestow upon me. Sometimes there are people that, you know, bless me every month, and there are people who bless me just periodically, but I appreciate all of that. And I will tell you that I tithe on what you send to me, and in fact I do a triple tithe, and I keep some to distribute to others, to bless others, and some help me to keep the feast. And so you are a great blessing to me, and I just want to thank you all very much for blessing me. Because of your blessings, I am able to bless others. And so, you know, the Lord's system just works so fabulous. If everybody would just follow it, we would all be doing very well indeed. So, see, the Lord starts with the blessing and He ends with blessing. Well, I hope this Torah portion has been a blessing to you. Shabbat Shalom.